Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Shabbos Daf Yud. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 7 lines from the top of Daf Yud. In our last shiur, at the very end of our last shiur, we discussed the issue of getting ready for davening, getting ready for Shmon Esrei. And when we speak about getting ready, particularly in the area of clothing, proper attire, this Gemara, today's sugya, opens up with what we call under our Nosei heading, the topic heading in the margin, Hachona L'Tfila, preparation for prayer, for davening. So, in our markings, you'll notice under our Mivneh heading, a double underline, which is one of our series markings, and we've written Sidro Shel Hanhogis Rabbonim Bekesher Shel Tfila, a series of practices that different rabbis practiced in anticipation or during their Shmoneh Esrei. The Gemara, Rava Bar Rav Huna, Rami Puzmiki U Matzli. He would place what appears to be something like socks on his feet in order to daven. Tosfos points out that from here we see that one should not daven barefoot, except for Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur, when one is not to have shoes on his feet, and then being barefoot would be acceptable. However, otherwise he would. Rava was diligent in covering his feet with socks. Omar, and he said, Hikoin likras, this is the same pasuk that we ended off our previous year. Hikoin means hachona, get ready before you greet the Almighty, and in our context, greet him in prayer. Rava shodi glime upochar yode umatsli. Rava removed his cloak. And Rashi adds, "Shelo yireh kechashuv," that he should not appear as a person of distinction in order to daven, a sign of humility. And pochar yodeh, he would clasp his hands. Rashi says he would clasp his hands by folding his fingers one hand into the other. So he'd hold his hands with his fingers clenched, one with the the fingers of one hand clenched with the fingers of the other hand. And he explained that this approach was Omar ke'avdo kame more, like a servant in the presence of his master, which is the sign of servility and humility. Omar Ravashi, chazino le l'Rav Kahana. Ravashi says, I noticed Rav Kahana ki ikot sarav alma, when there was a time of strain or tribulation in the world, shodi glime upochayadu matzli, he would do the what we just saw before in Rava's name. He would remove his outer cloak and clasp his hands and pray. And Omar explaining kavdu kamimore, like a servant in front of his master, so that when there is trouble, a person has to demonstrate more extensive humility and servility in order to arouse the mercy of heaven. Ki iko shalma, when there was peace and things were going well, lovish umiskasi umisatef, he would actually cloak himself with the outer cloak, and he would wrap himself. This misatef was a type of wrapping, umatzli, and davin, omar hikoin likras elokech Yisrael, and explaining that one has to prepare himself for davening in a proper way, in this case, in a proper clothing fashion. Rava chazia the Rav Hanuna, the komarach b'tzotzi, Rava noticed that Rav Hanuna was davening, praying in excessively long Shmon Esrei. Omar, and Rava said, question this behavior, this choice of time use, and said, "Manichim chay oylem v'oiskim b'chay isha." Could it be that one sets aside a pursuit that is of everlasting value? One earns his keep in the world of the eternity, in the future, and that's through Torah study. Torah study is the primary method of gaining chay oylem haba. And while you're davening, so you're not engaged in Torah studying, and oiskim b'chay isha is being involved with that which is necessary for day-to-day current living in this world, which is represented by prayer, where one prays for good health, he prays for peace, he prays for food. All of these are necessities of Olam Hazeh, of this world. So Rava was questioning Rav Hamnuna's investment of time in spending so much time in davening, when he could have davened in a shorter amount of time and invested the saved time for more learning. So that was Rava's wonderment with regard to Rav Hamnuna. V'hu savar, Rav Hamnuna felt that one it doesn't encroach on the time of the other. Zman tfila l'chud v'zman Torah l'chud. They're separate times, and that when one is dedicating himself to tfila, so it's not as if it's coming on at the expense of a time that would have been otherwise dedicated to Torah. Rav Yirmiyahu have Yosef kamei de Rabbi Zera v'havi aski b'shmaitza. Here is another story where Rav Yirmiyahu is sitting in the presence of Rabbi Zera, and they were involved in Torah study. Noga litzliyei, it was becoming late with regard to davening, and apparently Rav Yirmiyahu had not davened yet, and it was getting late in the day. V'havi komisarev Rav Yirmiyahu, and Rav Yirmiyahu was hastening to get up, in other words, to leave the learning session in order to go daven. Well, Kori Ole Rabbi Zera referred regarding Rabbi Yirmiyahu's behavior, Meisir Ozno Mishma Torah Gam Tfiloso Toeva. A rather harsh statement, we'll say, but he's quoting here a pasuk that says that one who removes his ears from listening to Torah, his tefillah will as well be an abomination. In other words, Rabbi Zera was reflecting the sentiment we saw before of Rava, that to abandon Torah learning for the sake of tefillah is a poor choice. You can see we have a diamond now. This is a continuation of the series, the diamond series that we start on Daf Tes, referring back to the times, the beginning times of the different activities mentioned in the Mishnah. Here we're asking, Meimosai Hascholas Din. We'll be using another diamond, even though it's a little bit different, but the diamond that is forthcoming after this is Ad Mosai Yoshvin Bedin. Until what time does one sit in judgment? So the topic at hand, and we've noted this on the side of our Gemara under our Nose Say heading, Yeshiva Bedin, sitting in judgment, Ma'alosa, the different positive descriptions of this, and Zmano, and times. Me'emosai Hascholas Din. Rav Yirmiyahu of Rabbi Yona, Chad Omar, we have two opinions. One said, Mishi is Atfu Hadayonim, V'chad Omar, Mishi Yiftechu Ba'lei Dinim. One says, when the judges cloak themselves, and the purpose of the judge cloaking himself, so Rashi explains, this is a sign of the fear of the Almighty. And also, by having one's head wrapped in a type of cloak, it prevents peripheral vision from operating, so that a person is concentrated on his topic and not distracted by things happening to either side. So from the time they cloak themselves is when din is said to begin, and that ties into the halachas we discussed in our previous shiur. The Chad Omar, the other opinion, says when the litigants open up with their claims. And the Gemara points out that these two opinions are really not in argument with one another. Velo pligi, they're not arguing. Ha de aski v'osu bedina. The standard of mishiftechu balei dinim and not cloaking is when they were already involved with a previous case, and since they had been already sitting in judgment over a previous case, they'd already been cloaked, as judges are expected to be. And now, regarding the current case, and the timing, we'll just say the situation where a second case comes in front of them very close to the time for Mincha. So, what is considered the beginning of this case, which we would say better not to start it, but if you started it, so continue. So the if you started it would be if the litigants opened up with their claims. And the other standard, ha, the standard of cloaking themselves, is considered the beginning. The lo askivasu bedina, they had not been involved with any other cases that day, and they started their judgment around this time of the 12 noon, which we said is somach lemincha. So we say that if they haven't cloaked themselves yet, so better for them to wait and first daven mincha. But if they cloaked themselves already at 12 noon, so they don't have to stop and can and are able to continue with judgment. Rav Ami, Rav Asi, Havu Yasvi, Vegarsi, Beini Amudi. The Rav Ami and Rav Asi used to sit and learn between the pillars. These are pillars that Rashi explains, Shalias Beis HaMedrash Nishan Alehem. The pillars on which the second story of the Beis Medrash was supported. So they sat and learned. V'chol shaita v'shaita havetafchi a'ibro didasha. And at all hours, people would knock on the door at the threshold, the entranceway, the Amri, and they would say, "Iiko di is le dina." Rav Ami and Rav Asi would say that if there's anyone that has a case, le ovelesi, so enter and we will deal with the case. So you have a picture here of these great rabbinic figures that were involved with Torah study all day, but if someone had a case that they needed to be judged, so they would stop their Torah study and deal with the case. Rav Chisda v'Rabo bar Rav Huna havu yasvi bedina kula yoyma. These two towering figures would sit in judgment all day. Havu kucholish livayu. This expression arouses two pirushim, two explanations in the Rashi. So if we look in the Rashi, the Cholish Libayo, number one, Rashi will find a bit of a ways up from here in the Rashi commentary. He says, number one, Mitztarin Shelo Osku Oisayon Batorah. If they were sitting all day in judgment, so they had a sense of regret or remorse that they had not engaged in Torah study at all that day. The number two shot in the Rashi, you could see a couple lines later, we have a little two we put in for your convenience. V'li nira, it's an abbreviated expression, Rashi says, V'li nira, di'ein ze mashmos loshen libayhu. To say regret, you wouldn't use this expression of cholosh libayhu. Ela loshon cholosh datayu. The more appropriate expression would be that their mind was weakened, a sense of regret. V'loshon cholosh libayhu, this expression is more appropriate, is Loshen Tainesu. It's a Loshen of someone in fasting. Shelo Sadu Kol Hayom, that they had not eaten all day. In other words, as a result of sitting in judgment all day, so they didn't eat, and naturally they became weak. Okay, so we have two pshatim. One is a more of a emotional explanation, and the other is a physical explanation. So, in light of that, the Tana Lehu, Rav Yichia bar Rav Midifti. So, Rav Chia addresses Rav Chisda and Rabo and says to them the following Tanaic source. He says this over, and the contents will be self-explanatory as to why this is reported as a reaction to their state. The pasuk says regarding Moshe Rabbeinu, it says, "Vayamud om al Moshe min aboyker ad erev." The nation stood besides Moshe all day. This pasuk is describing Moshe Rabbeinu sitting in judgment over the needs of the people. But the pasuk says he sat there from morning till evening. Would it occur to you to think that Moshe Rabbeinu, the leader of the Jewish people, sat in judgment literally all day? Torosu Masai Nasis. The Torah learning that Moshe Rabbeinu was charged with. After all, he was the primary teacher of Klal Yisrael, hence his name Moshe Rabbeinu, Moshe our teacher. So when would he be engaged in Torah study if he was sitting in judgment all day? Elo loymar loch. So the pasuk tells us that one should not take this literally, but rather it tells us kol dayan shidon din emes lamito. Any judge who sits and judges in a truthful way, afilu shol achas. Now you notice we've dashed underline that because this is the point. What the source is saying, and it's a response, serves as a response for Fisden Rabo Barav Huna, that even if you sit in judgment, in proper judgment, 1 hour of the day, the pasuk considers you as if you are a partner in creation with the Almighty. How do you see that in the pasuk? The pasuk says the nation stood by Moshe from morning till evening. And the pasuk in creation says vayboker yom echad. So you see the expression of boker ado erev, boker and erev mentioned in the context of creation as well. So it was not necessary for Rav Chisdon and for Rabbi Barav Huna to sit in judgment literally all day in order to achieve the merit accorded to someone who sits in judgment. Even 1 hour of the day would be sufficient. Ad Mosai Yoshvin Bedin, until when is one to sit in judgment? Omar Rav Sheshes, Ad Zman Seuda, until meal time. The Gemara, as it continues, will deal with the source for that, and then deal with what constitutes meal time. Omar Rav Chama, my crow, what's the pasuk that indicates this? Dichtiv, I loch eretz shemalkech nar v'sorayach baboker yochelu, ashrech eretz shemalkech ben chorim v'sorayach bo eis yochelu begvura v'lo vashti. This pasuk deals with dayonim. There's an allusion in this pasuk to dayonim, and it mentions also times for eating. The pasuk, let's say we look at the Rashi, Shemalkech da yonecha, Shadayon kori melech. The dayan is called a king, Shenemar melech b'mishpot yamid eretz. And that pasuk, you see a relationship between melech and mishpot. So he sits in judgment. And we continue in the Gemara, explains a little bit about this pasuk that says that fortunate is the people or the land whose king is a free man, and the Sorach and its ministers eat at their time, begvura velo bashti. So the Gemara says begvura shel tera velo bashtia shel yayin, that the praise of the kings and ministers in this pasuk is that they operate through the strength of Torah and not through the drinking of wine. Tanu Rabbanan. We have another source that this source features the times for eating, and this is how we've labeled this under our no say heading on the side, Zmane Achila. Shal Rishona, the first hour of the day, that would be like from 6 to 7 a.m. on a 12-hour day basis. So that's the Shal Rishona, Machol Ludim. This is the time that the Ludim. Ludim is the name of a people that were cannibals, and they were people that were very ravenous individuals, and that certainly is obvious by their choice of menu. So that's called the first hour of the day. Is associated. People who eat then are associated with ravenousness and cannibalism. Shnia Michael Listam. The second hour of the day is the time that thieves eat. Shlishis Michael Yorshim. The third hour of the day, that would be from 8 to 9, is the time that heirs eat. Now, heirs is a description of people that have a lot of money and don't need to go out to work. So they Rashi says, Yor Shehun Rav Shelo Torchubo, they inherited a lot of money that they didn't expend efforts on. V'ein Asukin V'dogim Lo Shut Acharei Mezonos V'Lasuk Molocha. So those kind of people that aren't engaged with seeking work and income, they sit down to eat at the third hour of the day. Revius Michael Poyalim. The fourth hour is the hour that you will find workers eating. Chamishis Michael Kol Odom. The fifth hour of the day is the hour that the general population would eat. There's a Gemara interruption, and that's why we have these brackets. Because the Gemara is going to challenge that which we just said and then restate the hours after the brackets. That having been said, we continue. The Gemara asks here, Amy, is that so? V'amar of Papa Vias Zman Sudalachal, that the fourth hour of the day is the time, is meal time for the general population. Ella, so the more accurate version is Revius Michael Kol Adam, Chamishis Michael Poalim, and Shishis, the sixth hour of the day, Michael Tamidei Chachamim. That's the time that a Talmud Chacham sits down to his meal. That would be the sixth hour of day from 11 till 12. Mikan v'elech kezorik even lechemis. From that point onwards, if someone's going to start eating after the sixth hour of day, it's like it will have no nutritional value, because, and it's described as someone who is as throwing a stone into a flask. There's no benefit that the flask has from receiving the stone, so to throwing food into the body after the sixth hour of the day. Now, Rashi on this has two approaches. He says that the first approach is that it's actually not helpful. The second shot that he prefers is that though it's not, it's really not injurious, but it's also not beneficial. It's neutral. Omar Abaye qualifies this last point and says, "Lo amor el delo toy midi bitzafra," that food is described or this late hour of eating is described as zorik even. Lechemas is only if he had not eaten anything in the morning. Avol toy midi bitzafra, if he tasted something in the morning, then less lon ba. Then there is no problem with having the more we'll call the main meal after the sixth hour. Omar Rav Ado Bar Avo. You can see we're continuing using the double underline because this is another statement of Rabbonim in the context of Tefillah. So Rav Ado says, Mispal Odom Tefillah Sub Beis HaMerchatz. A person can daven his Shmone Esrei in a bathhouse. The Gemara asks, is that really so, Meisvei? And we're going to now see a Tanaic source in which we have a geometric form, a house marking, and on the side of our Gemara, we have a topic heading, Tefillah Bebeis HaMerchatz, the issue of prayer in a bathhouse. And the Mivneh structural note says, Gimel Ezorim Besoch Beis HaMerchatz. There are three areas in a bathhouse. And the Nafgamina, the practical outcome of knowing this information, is Ma Mutar V'Osir B'chol Echad. What is allowed and what is not allowed in each one of these areas. Of course, we're dealing with a bathhouse. It's a place that people bathe, they're unclothed, and the is it a place that's proper for prayer? So, Rav Ada said a person is allowed to daven in a bathhouse. Well, Meisvei, we're going to challenge his statement. Hanichnas Beis HaMerchatz, one who enters a bathhouse, Mokom Shebnei Odom Oimdim Levushim, the room in which people are still clothed, call that an outer chamber. The Rashi describes this: the bathhouse as having an innermost chamber, a middle chamber, and an outermost chamber. So the place that people are standing clothed, yesh shom mikra utfila v'ein soch lomar shela shalom. It's a place that people can engage in mikra. Rashi says mikra is kriyashma. Tefila is Shmona Esrei, and it goes without saying that a person can greet his friend, which is called She'ela Shom, greeting one's friend. Umeniach Tefillin, and it's a place that one could put on his Tefillin. The Ein Tzorach Lomar She'eino Choletz, and we don't have to tell you that there is no need to remove the Tefillin in that area. In other words, we're telling you can put them on, so it goes without saying that you don't have to remove them. Mokoyim shebenei odom oindin arumim ulevushim. This is a middle chamber where people are both unclothed and clothed. It's a type of, we'll call it the changing room, where people who finished with their bath will come and be in this room unclothed, but they're rapidly clothing themselves, and likewise people will be disrobing here as well. Rashi adds, "Arumin uvushin emtsoi, the middle chamber, sheyotzei boi arum umemayer lechasas es atzmo v'yotzei lechitzon." So the source continues, "Yesh shom sheila shalom." It's a place that you are allowed to greet your friend. The ain shom mikro tefila, but no recitation of kriyashma nor davening. The eino choletz tefillin. If a person walks in there while wearing tefillin, so he's not obligated to remove them. However, if he's not wearing them, the eino meniach lechatchila. However, it's not a place that one would choose to put his tefillin on in the first place. So you have this literally middle ground, where if you're wearing the tefillin, you don't have to remove them. However, if you're not wearing them, well, don't put them on over here. And finally, mokom shebnei odom oimdin arumim, the innermost chamber where people are, where none of the people are clothed, ein sham shela shalom, there is no greeting of friends. The ein tzorach lomar mikro tefila, and it goes without saying that there is no kriyashma nor tefila. The choletz tefillin, a person who is here must remove his tefillin. The ein tzorach lomar sheino manichon, and it goes without saying that he wouldn't put them on. So what we see here is that a bathhouse is not a place that you would expect one to daven in. So you have certainly the middle chamber. We saw there's no mikra tefila there, and the innermost chamber certainly no mikra and tefila there. So how can Rav Ado Bar Avo say that a person can daven in a bathhouse? And his comment would seem to be unqualified. It would seem to be a very convenient thing to say that, well, he's referring to the outer chamber, but he didn't qualify. He just said you can daven in a bathhouse. So the Gemara answers, Ki komar Rav Ado Bar Avo b'merchot she'ein bo adam. He was speaking about a bathhouse in which there are no people. The Gemara asks, V'homar Rav Yosi Bar Chanina, merchot shomru, the merchots that we spoke about as being restricted in prayer, afapi she'ein boi adam, even if there is no one there. So the you can't say that there's this opinion of leniency of Rav Ado is a reference to such a bathhouse. Now there's another comment that we put in brackets, but the brackets are here in order to de-emphasize it, because it's not the thrust of our sugya right now. And the second comment is base akise shamru, a bathroom, afapi she'ein boitzoa, a bathroom is restricted even if there is no waste matter, even if there are no feces there. It's still a place one could not daven. So we are still at odds trying to understand what Rav Ado Bar Avo was saying. Elo ki koma Rav Ado bechadeti. Rav Ado's comment was with regard to a new facility. Rashi says bechadeti shelo rochatz boi odo me'oilom elo shizminu l'tach. It's a place that no one actually bathed in. It was built and it was set aside. It was specified or dedicated to serve as a bathhouse, but it hasn't been used ever. It's new. The Gemara asks on this answer, the hall Mibaya bo le Ravina. This isn't so clear. In other words, the permissibility of using a Beis HaMerchatz Chadati, a new one, for prayer is something that Ravina actually raised as a question. So if Ravina raised the issue as a question, how can Rav Ado say with such assuredness that it's okay? What's Ravina's question? His minu the Beis HaKisei Mahu. If they set aside or designated a room to serve as a bathroom, what's the din? Yesh zimun o ein zimun. V'lo ifshitole. Lav Huadin Lemerchatz. His question was, is there zimun, meaning is the specification of an area for something of a binding nature, so that if you specified it as a Beis HaKisei, it would then be called a Beis HaKisei with all of those implications, including prayer restriction, or ein zimun, or maybe the designation is of no legal binding significance, and it would be okay. So that was his question, and it wasn't resolved. That's below his shitalei. It wasn't resolved. So, is it not so that the same would apply to a Beis HaMerchatz, which is in fact our topic, which is the point Rav Ada was speaking about? So that it's not clear. So how can Rav Ada say that it's a person will be allowed to daven in a new Beis HaMerchatz? No, the Gemara says, not so, meaning the association you're making between Beis HaKisei and Beis HaMerchatz is not an association. They're not on equal footing. Dilma, it could be that shiny Beis HaKisei, demois, the Beis HaKisei is worse. It has a negative name to it. Rashi says at the top, shiny Beis HaKisei, demois, v'shem meguna alav. It has a negative name. Of course, we can't talk about it being actually disgusting. We're talking about a brand new place. But the name, nevertheless, is Meguna. And that's why, with regard to the Beis HaKisei, Ravina has his question. But the same question would not apply to a Beis HaMerchatz, a bathhouse. And hence, Rav Ada's assuredness, or certainty, that davening in a new bathhouse would be okay. We are at the top of Omid Beis, and in the middle of the line, the Gemara continues with a quote from that which we saw before. We have an arrow opposite the text, to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, indicating to look at Omid Aleph, and a corresponding arrow you will find opposite the sixth line from the bottom of Omid Aleph. Ein Shom Shela Shalom. This was a reference to, there is no a greeting of one's friends in the inner chamber of the Beis HaMerchatz. Messiah lay l'Rav Hamnuna mishmei de'ula. This will support Rav Hamnuna's teaching, the Omar who said, "Asur l'adam shitein shalom l'chaveru Beis HaMerchatz." It's forbidden to greet someone in a bathhouse. Mishum shenemar, and it says in the pasuk, "Vayikra lo Hashem shalom." What we need to explain is that when speaking about greeting a friend, we're talking about specifically using the term shalom, where people say shalom aleichem. The word shalom, often translated as peace, in actuality is a name of the Almighty. There are different levels of names of Almighty. Some of them cannot even be erased. Some can. There are different levels we will say. However, in our context, we're talking about the name Shalom, and hence, if you're in the inner chamber of the Beis HaMerchatz, it would be inappropriate and hence forbidden to greet someone with the name of Hashem. In fact, when we were learning Maseches Brochas, at the end of Maseches Brochas, the Mishnah and Gemara, which explained it, spoke about using the Shem Hashem in greeting people. And in this pasuk, we see that Gidon, who is described, who is the speaker here, he called unto Hashem Shalom, indicating that that's the name of Hashem. Elo me'ato hemnuso nami osur lemeimar bebeis hakisei dichtiv hokel haneemon. There's a pasuk that says hokel haneemon, and Ne'emon has to do with trustworthiness. So are you going to tell us that you can't mention the word emunah, belief or trustworthiness, in the bathroom because you have this pasuk? V'chiteima hochinami, and if you say that's right, v'omar rovo bar machasio marav chamo bar guyo marav, we should point out the markings that there's now a series, and we have this indicated under our Mivneh heading on the side, Sidros Shel Memros de Rovo Bar Machasya, series of statements made by Rovo Bar Machasya. And he said, Shori Lemeimar Himnusa Bebeis HaKisei, that it's allowed to say Emunah in a bathroom. So if you're going to tell us that Hashem Shalom is reason for not saying Shalom in the Beis HaKisei, so why is there this difference that one is allowed to say Emuna in the Beis HaKisei? The Gemara answers, Hasam, there is a fundamental difference. There, Shem Gufei Lo Ikri Hachi. In the Pasuk Hokel Ne'emon, it's not, the word Ne'emon is not the name of Hashem. That's not his name. The Metargaminon, the Aramaic rendition, the Targum of that Pasuk is Eloka Mehemna, the reliable, the trustworthy God. So it's a description of the Almighty, but not his name. Hacha, in the case of the Pasuk with Gideon, Shem Gufei Ikri Shalom. His name is Shalom. Dechtiv Vayikra Lo Hashem Shalom. Gideon called the Almighty Shalom. The Tosfos explains that if the word Shalom had meant something else, something like calling unto Hashem, the one who is responsible for his own peace, so he would have said Hashem Shlomo. But by saying Hashem Shalom, it's a name of Hashem, and the word Shalom is that he is the one who creates the entity of peace. We continue with another Memra of Rav Rova Bar Machasya, and hence you can see another diamond with a double underline following. The Omar Rova Bar Machasya Marav Chamba Vuyim Arav. And there's a topic that we have for this section as well. Hanoisin Maton L'Chavir Tzorch L'Odio. And that's what he says. That one who gives a gift to his friend, the giver has to inform him. Shinemar, the Pasuk says in the context of Shabbos, Lodas ki ani Hashem mekadishchem. This Pasuk we've written on the side of our Gemara in full. You can see Shmos Perek Lamed Aleph Pasuk Yud Gimel. The Pasuk reads, Va'ato daber el b'nei Yisrael. Kodesh Baruch Hu addresses Moshe Rabbeinu, says that he should tell the people of Israel, Lemor, saying thusly, Ach es shabsosai tishmoru ki Oishi beini uveinechem ledorosechem lodas ki ani Hashem mekadishchem. You'll notice we have a bracketed section. The brackets here are for skipping purposes to make the reading much easier. Following the brackets, there's a question on a direct question on what we just said. Amy, the Gemara asks, we're skipping the for a moment. You can see also we have a bracket length indicator to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, a vertical dash dotted line, telling you this is the length of the skipped section. Where now the Gemara asks, Amy, is this so that you have to tell someone about a gift that you're giving them? V'omar Rav Chama Rabbi Chanina Hanoisin Matono Chaver Ein Sorach Lodio Shneamar Moshe Loyoda Ki Koran Or Pono Bedabro Ito. Well, We see immediately the question. We also have, we've used a dashed underline here, Ein Sof Lodio, to be contrasted with the statement above, where you see a similar dashed underline, Sorach Lodio. So you see from this that you don't have to, and we'll then get back to the entire flow. What we just wanted to do now is point out the structure. Going back to Rava Bar Machasya's comment, one who gives his friend a gift, he should inform him. And the Pasuk said, Lo das ki ani Hashem mekadishchem. Tanyo nami hochi, we have a Tanaic source that supports this. Lo das ki ani Hashem mekadishchem. Omar le HaKadosh Baruch Hu LeMoshe. The Almighty says to Moshe, and that's what this pasuk is alluding to, is the following discussion. Matana toivu yesh li bebeis genozai. I have a nice gift in my treasury. V'shabos shmo, the name of the gift is Shabbos. V'ani mevakesh litno liYisrael, and I want to give it to the Jewish people. Lech v'hodiom, go and inform them. Mikan omer v'shumam liyo hanoisin pas litino tzoch lodia limo. Here, Rav Shimon Gamliel concludes that if one gives some bread to a child, he should inform the child's mother. One of the explanations behind the informing someone of giving a gift, is that this will increase love and social grace amongst the population. Rashi says Shemitoch kach ohavo. Rashi, we'll start with the Rashi, the third line from the top, Tzorech lehodio, you have to tell someone about a gift you intend to give them. Matan ploni etein loch, you tell someone, I am going to give you a gift. V'zeu derech kavod, this is an honorable way of conduct. D'shemo yizbayish lekablo, a person might be embarrassed to receive a gift. Umitoch kach misratzin bedvorim ve'eno bosh badovar, and through telling him ahead of time, I plan to give you a gift, so they can work things out, and he won't be embarrassed to receive it. V'chein im nosno beveso shalom yidiyoso. Likewise, if someone placed a gift in someone's house without the homeowner's knowledge, tzoruch lehodio she miyodo ba, you have to tell the homeowner that I am the one that left it there. Shemitoch kach yehei oavo. Through this, he will come to love him, increase affability amongst the population. The Gemara continues. My ovid lei. The last point that was made in the source was that one who gives a sandwich, gives bread to a child, you have to inform his mother. So how do you accomplish informing his mother? My ovid lei, what should you do? Omar Abaye, shoif lei mashcha umoli lei kuchla. Smear some oil on his face, color the area around his eyes with kohol. Kohol is a type of coloring. It had certain places in the Shas, you see this had medicinal value, and it could have also cosmetic value. The point is that when the mother sees the child with the oil smeared on his face, she'll ask, how did you get oil between your eyes? And the child will say, so-and-so gave me the bread. And so we'll accomplish our ends of informing the mother. This will cause the mother to become aware. The Gemara continues, Idno dechayesh l'kshofimai. Nowadays, that people would be suspect of black magic if one sees oil or kochel smeared on faces. That would be a sign of black magic. And we want to avoid that, of course. Omar Rav Papa, Shoyifle Me'oiso Hamin. So the one who's giving the sandwich would simply put some crumbs on the child's face, and the same ends would be accomplished. The Gemara asks, Eini, is this so that you have to inform someone about a gift? V'omar Rav Chama Rabbi Chanino, Hanoisim Aton El Chavero, Ein Tzorech Lehodio. Someone who gives a gift to his friend does not have to inform him. Shenemar, O Moshe Lo Yoda Ki Koran Or Ponov Bedabro Ito. Moshe Rabbeinu, when he came down from receiving the Torah, he came down with a radiance, a type of facial glow. And he got this, as we said, from being on Mount Sinai, and he wasn't aware that this was happening. And when he would encounter people, they would see it, and he didn't know. He didn't know immediately, that is. So, and this glow is something that is considered a gift that he received, and he wasn't informed. The Gemara says, Lo kashya, ha b'milsa d'avida l'gluye, ha b'milsa d'lo avida l'gluye. Milsa d'avida is something that will become known. Something that will become known, then the giver doesn't have to inform the receiver. It will become known that the giver gave it to this receiver. However, something that won't become known unless there's specific a specific announcement to that effect, so then you do have to inform them. The Gemara asks, "Well, Shabbos Davido Ligluyei? Well, what about Shabbos? And Shabbos is something that will become known. The Rashi points out on La Gluye says Mi Nosno Lo. So it will be known who gave the Shabbos. So what's the need? Why above in the source did it say, go tell them that I'm going to give you Shabbos? The Gemara answers, Matan Schora Lo Ovid Ligluye. The reward for keeping Shabbos is not something that would become known. So that's what the Kodesh Baruch Hu wanted Moshe Rabbeinu to inform them. Rav Chisda, there's a little story, and let's point out ahead of time that Rav Chisda was a Kohen. We also want to note, by way of our markings, that this is an incident, a Maisa, and to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text, you can see we've written in the word Maisa and circled it, and a vertical dashed line indicates the length of this story. Now, as a Kohen, he receives different kinds of tithes, and one of the portions that a Kohen receives is from common meat, meaning non-sacrificial meat, that is slaughtered. So the Kohen receives the Zroah L'chayim Akeva, and those are different parts of the animal, the front arm, the cheek, and the stomach. Those parts or organs or limbs are given to the Kohen, and Rav Chisda was here seen holding them. So the story continues. Rav Chisda havinoket biyode tarte matanto de tura. Rav Chisda had two sets of Kohen tithes from oxen that had been slaughtered. Omar and Rav Chisda announced, Kol man de osi v'omar li shmeitzel chadati mishmei de rav yavo le nihale. Anyone who will come and tell me a teaching in the name of Rav that I have not learned, have not heard yet, I will give him these meat portions. Omar le rovo bar mechasya. Hochi omar Rav. We have a little number one over here because there's a number two that follows a few lines later. Rovo says, thusly says Rav, hanoisei matonu lechavero, tzorech lehodio. This is a teaching that we had seen above in Rav's name. We have a little star to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. You can align it with the star above, and you'll see where this comes from. And it is a reference to the issue of one who gives a gift to his friend. He has to inform the receiver. Shneamar, lo das ki ani Hashem mekadishchem. Well, this was a new teaching for Rav Chisda. Yohavo nihalei, and Rav Chisda gave Rovo bar mechasya the meat. Omar and Rova Bar Machasi, upon receiving this gift, says, Chaviven Olecho Shmaitzo de Rav Kulehai, are Rav's teachings so dear to you that you're willing to give them this expensive payment in exchange for hearing a Rav teaching? Omar Leyin, Rav says, yes. Omar Ley, well, Rova Bar Machasi says, I have news for you. I have another teaching of Rav. He says, "Hainu dom Rav, this behavior of yours is explained by Rav with the following phrase: Milsa alavishaihu yakira." The word milsa is a coat. A personal coat. A person who has a coat and he's been wearing it for a while is of a special value, is expensive, is dear to the one that wears it. In other words, it's something that you have fit into and are used to and enjoy wearing, so it has more value to you than your coat would have to someone else. What's the point? So Rashi says, Rashi across from here, Klomar, Lefi sha'ato talmido shel rav v'rogi b'shmu oisav. Since you're a student of Rav's and you're accustomed to hearing his teachings, ato mechazer achrim, you seek them out because you learned by him. So it creates a greater sense of attachment and fondness, and therefore you are willing to pay for his teachings, for teachings that you did not hear from Rav as of yet. So Rav Chisda heard this description, and Omar Lei, Rav Chisda says to Rovo Bar Machasi, Omar Rav Hochi, does Rav really say like that? He says this in exclamation. He says, Basraiso Adifali Mikamaisa. This second thing, the second teaching, is even better than the first teaching. V'yava nikitno achriti, and had I had more meat, yahivno loch, I would give that. I would have given that to you. V'omar rovo bar mechasya omar rav chamo bar gurya omar rav. L'oilom al yishan odom benoy bein habonim. A person should not treat any one of his sons differently or better than the others. Shebishvil mishkal shnei sloyim milas shenosan yankiv liyosef yosef mishar bonav. Because of this amount, there's a measure here. Mishkal is a weight. Mishkal shnei sloyim. That's an amount. The Rashi says lav dafka, not it's an expression, doesn't mean specifically this particular way. Milas is a fabric, and it's a reference to a special coat that is, or a special shirt or coat known as the ksoinis pasim that Yankev Avinu had given his son Yosef, which he had not given to any of his other sons. So niskanu bo echov, the sons became jealous. V'nisgagil hadovor v'yordu avosenu l'mitzrayim. And one thing led to the next, and we ended up going into the Egyptian exile. V'omar rovo bar mechasya omar avchamo bar gurya omar rav. L'oilom yichazir odom v'yeshiv b'ir shiyeshivos t'kroiva. A person should seek out to live in a recently established community, in a new community. Because it's been recently settled, so the amount of sinning that took place there is much less. Its sins are less. This is a pasuk in the context of Loit during the destruction of Sodom. So he was accompanied by angels, and he tells them that, well, there's this place that's nearby, and it's Mitzar. The name Mitzar will be explained a little bit more clearly as we go along in the Gemara. My Kroiva, what would trying to do right now is understand how does this pasuk reflect Rava Bar Machasya's teaching. What does the word krova mean? Ilema krova de mikrova vezuta. The word zuta means small, and that's where the word mitzor comes in. Mitzor means something that's small. If the point is that Lot is telling them, let's go to this city because it's close by and small, and therefore you don't have to, as Rashi says, ain't srich matem akbid al kiyuma, it's small, so you don't have to worry about destroying it. It's insignificant. Well, the hakachazu law, they see it just as well as he does. So why would he point this out to them? Ela, so rather the expression krova doesn't mean it's nearby, but rather it has to do with something recent. It's nearby in time. It's been settled recently. Because it's been settled recently, so it's the sin level of that community is less. And that's the name Mitzar, having to do with something that's young, in the sense, like the word Sa'ir, which means young, its sins are little, are few. Omar Rebbe Oven, my craw. What is the pasuk that would tell us that Mitzar, this place that Lot is suggesting to run to, is younger, is more recently settled than Stone, which was right now being destroyed? So the answer is Dichtiv. The pasuk says Imolta Na Shama, and the word Na is Begematria Nun V'chad Havi, is works out to be 51. Nun is has a numerical value of 50, and Aleph is 1. So it's been in existence for 51 years. V'shel Stom Nun Beis. Nun V'beis means Stom had existed for 52 years. V'shel Vasa, the years that Stom enjoyed peace, Chof Vav. It had enjoyed peace for 26 years. We are at the top of Daf Yud Aleph, Dichti. The pasuk says Shteim Esrei Shana Avdu Es Kedor LaOmer, that for 12 years they had been under the thumb, under the rule of Kedor LaOmer, the name of a king who appears in the war that was fought between the four kings versus the five kings in Sefer Bereishis. So Kedorlaomer ruled over Stom for 12 years, Ushlosh Esrei Shana Moradu, and they were in rebellion for 13 years. That's, you have their 12 years of being ruled, 13 years of rebellion, it's 25 years, and these are not years of peace. Ubarbo Asar Shana, and after that, that's on the 14th year, so they finally gain their release. So they were, that's 26 years of being under rulership and under a strain and pain, and for another 26 years, so they had peace. The Rashi engages in calculating all of this chronology. As I say, he elaborates on this at the bottom of Yud Amid Beis, but for our purposes, the point is that Stom had been in existence for 52 years, and Mitzar, the place that Lot wanted to run to for 51 years, claiming that is that's a good reason for us to go there, in that it has fewer sins. This concludes today's Gemara section of Gemara Markings Daf Yomi. For those who are interested, our site offers a shiur on today's Daf Yomi Tosfos, presenting the Tosfos text with explanation.